TFM.
This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, your source for the best audiobooks, including unabridged readings of the latest novels from the incredible family of Star Trek authors. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help this show and the network at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, this is Michael Dorn, Lieutenant Commander Worf from Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 231. Hope is a powerful thing. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Larry Nemechek. This is a somewhat different episode as we take a look at a real-world crisis and how we can help those in need. We're joined by actor Adil Hussein, who portrayed Aditya Sahil in Star Trek Discovery Season 3, to talk about the COVID-19 situation in India, where he lives. We also discuss Star Trek, the art of acting, and what inspired his portrayal of Sahil, as well as entertainment and how it helps us cope during difficult times. Plus, Adil shares thoughts on how we might reach that more prosperous future that Gene Roddenberry envisioned. So let's step into the Ready Room. Well, Larry, hello. I thought I'd find you here in the Ready Room, even though I know you've been pretty busy these days, but I guess you've set up shop right here in my Ready Room.
Chris, I heard there were rumors flying that you might be up for some company tonight. So I thought I'd just, you know, make myself at home since I feel like I live here, or at least I sleep here often, seems.
That's right. We're not alone here today. We have a guest this week. I'm very, very pleased to welcome here to our Ready Room, Adil Hussein from New Delhi, India. Adil, welcome.
Thank you so much, Larry and Christopher, for staying up late at night, Larry. Thank you, in LA, and Christopher in Japan. It's late afternoon, I'm sure, and I'm very happy to be here.
Just part of that global phenomenon called Star Trek. That's what it is.
That's right. We are within the 30-sector scanning range of Lieutenant Sahil. So, listeners, of course, Adil, know you from your wonderful role in the first and the last episode of Star Trek Discovery Season 3 as Aditya Sahil, who is, kind of mining what is left of the Federation at the beginning and then, of course, becomes a commissioned officer at the end. And I've been looking forward to talking to you for quite a while. We've been chatting for a while, and in the time that that's been going on, of course, big events have happened in the world, and there's quite a serious situation happening there in India where you are. So we want to talk about that some today, as well as to talk about your experience on Star Trek.
Sure. I'm looking forward.
So just right off the bat, you know, here in Japan, we're having our own, it's not as serious in terms of life or death as it is there in India, but we are having our own problems with coronavirus response. But in talking to you on Twitter, following your tweets and talking to you about what's going on there and following the news, I can see the situation has become very, very serious. So just to start off here, can you tell us what's happening on the ground right now?
It's a grim situation, if I can put it that way. It almost feels like we are in the middle of a catastrophe. Indian health system is overwhelmed. Probably nobody had imagined the scale of infection and the infection turning into serious situations or conditions in the physical body. Nobody probably had imagined this will happen. And the health system hadn't been upgraded since probably decades, since last 70 years or 75 years since the independence. Cities are okay, in terms of health system, but cannot take the load of this particular onslaught of coronavirus infection, because people are dying in front of the hospitals, lack of oxygen, people are lining up to cremate their bodies in the cremation ground, and they had to wait for 70 hours, 2 days to even cremate their bodies. In the villages, now the infection has gone into the villages, and there are hundreds of bodies are floating in the rivers in India. Because the poor people in the villages, there is no health infrastructure. There are few health centers, but not hospitals in the villages. So they cannot carry their patients or loved ones to the hospitals. They die, and they don't have the money as well to cremate their bodies anymore. So they are just dumping into the rivers. And it sort of reminded me of this play, Antigone, you know, where the entire play is about giving the dead their dignity of the burial. And this particular tragedy is happening, the Antigone tragedy is happening in the scale that I could not even ever dream in my wildest dream. So it is extremely frustrating, very, very hopeless. I feel that I cannot do anything about it. And somehow I'm trying my best to just cope with the overwhelmed news which are coming in of my friends, my colleagues in the film industry who passed away due to lack of proper treatment. My wife's father's elder brother who passed away, I took around 5 hours to even organize an ambulance. And by the time he reached the hospital, within 2 days, he passed away. So my friends, my students' mother just passed away yesterday. So in the midst of all that, it is probably going to take a huge toll on the psychological health of a lot of people. And there are doctors who are suffering. One of the doctors have committed suicide because he could not bear the pain of seeing people dying in the bed. Due to the lack of oxygen, the 20 people died in one of the capital city's hospital called Batra Hospital in Delhi. He could not, one of the head of the department who passed away in the hospital because of the lack of oxygen. There was no oxygen for them. So I can keep counting. I mean, I can keep telling you incidences mm-hmm. after incidences. There are thousands of them. And I feel, as I said before, that I feel completely, overwhelmed and helpless at the same time that I can't do anything much. I had been trying my best to coordinate between oxygen suppliers and patients and medicine suppliers and patients. On my Twitter account, I'm not even allowed to go out of the house because there is a curfew. You know, in Delhi, unless you have very special reason to go out, you cannot even step out of the door. So
do you have a foot in the medical or the medical supply world, or are you just doing that, trying to marshal oxygen? Are you just doing that as a lay person trying to do that?
Yes, that's what I'm doing as a lay person. I'm just putting up a tweet that this person needs a hospital bed or medicine or oxygen. These are the numbers. This is the number of the attendant of the patient. Can someone help? So people are coming out to help like that. You know, so I'm happy that I could help at least one person, if not many. But there are a lot of other organizations, for example, NGOs. There's a Sikh community, the religion of Sikh, you know, who mm-hmm. probably you know who wear turbans. The huge number of them, their worship places are being opened for public to come and to. So they're organizing food for the elderly people or anybody who would like to come and have a meal, or they're keeping oxygen cylinders in the worship places. People come in the car and they just put on their oxygen masks, you know, from the car itself. And so they're trying their best. Some of the temples, they have opened up now for the, you know, for the corona positive patients, for the preliminary care. Some mosques have opened up their doors for them, you know, for patients to come in and stay. So people are now trying to sort of come out and help each other, because the system, the authorities could not probably imagine this would be the scale of the infection and people would die in such huge numbers at all.
Does it seem like it's, I mean, we've been hearing here in the States, we've been hearing about it for a month, you know, when it's actually penetrated our bubble. I hate to say that, but some of the global news sometimes takes a while to sink in unless there's an American involved. But is it showing any signs of for whatever reason, either positive steps or is it just right now just running full throttle and there's no sign of anything turning back?
No, not at all. There's no sign of anything. I don't think the curve is going to flatten anytime soon. Mm-hmm. Because it might be sort of going down in certain cities, like Mumbai is showing less positive results amongst people. Some percentage has gone down, but now it is spreading inside the villages. People have gone back to mm-hmm. the villages. There were a few events which happened, which were known as super spreaders. Election happened, in few states. There are small mm-hmm. local body elections happened. And all that have created a lot of infections across the country. And now, there are going to be waves which will go from one place to the other. And then probably the third wave will occur. Experts are saying there will be a third wave. So we don't know. It's a very, I'm painting a very bleak picture, but that I'm sitting here and talking to you I'm sitting inside Delhi, in the midst of mm-hmm. all that. And a few kilometers from our house is one of the biggest cremation ground. There are people lining up to bury or to cremate their loved ones. And in the villages, a lot of people from the Hindu religion or Sanatana Dharma, they don't bury their dead, but they had to now bury because there is no firewood to cremate them in so many places, especially in the villages, in mm-hmm. poor people, those who are poor, they could not organize firewood to cremate their loved ones.
Wow. Yeah, it's truly tragic. So you said you're in a lockdown there right now. These lockdowns, do they seem to be having any real impact? Because we are going through like a seesaw states of emergency here in Japan, especially in Tokyo, but in some other areas. And, sometimes we see the numbers start to decline a bit. So then the government lifts it and then it goes back up and we're just in this seesaw situation. Is it having any effect there or is it just too widespread where even asking people to stay home is not enough?
I'm sure there is a certain amount of impact which will be because of the lockdown. Because, if you don't go out, if you do not contract the disease, even if you do contract the disease, it will be in a situation where the hospitals will be, will have the facilities ready because they are overwhelmed. There is no place in the hospital. So everybody has to get it at least just to get the herd immunity, as they say here, but not everybody at once. Then you cannot be treated because, people with a lot of influences are being turned down, like people, those who are the member of legislative assemblies, they don't have seats in the hospital with all the connections. They know who's who. In spite of that, people with money, they're ready to give thousands of dollars in order to be treated, but there is no place to be treated. The doctors are dying themselves. There are 750 doctors, those who have died, I think. I have it written here. Let me see.
And of course, while COVID is raging, people who have everyday health issues, right? There's no mm-hmm. place for them.
No, there's no place for them at all. If I get unwell now with some other disease, I cannot go to the hospital now at all.
We had such a horrible year here in the States, and I know there's some, I think a lot of people, again, we're in such a bubble in the States that some of these things, we've been so consumed with how bad our response was and how, making things worse with the prior leadership. And now so much seems to have turned around and good things seem to be going. And there's a lot of indecision now about coming out. And a lot of Americans have no clue that Europe, and I mean, we're hearing about India, but I don't think we know about Japan on a broad scale. We hear a little bit about Europe, but people, like the other day I saw somebody with a global viewpoint. There's a big debate now that 12 years old and older are approved to be vaccinated here in the States, and families with little kids, and the little kids go to daycares mm-hmm. and all that. And there's some very sincere concerns about how to mix this. And we are supposedly able to unmask and they can't, but but then I see people with a global perspective saying it's almost, you know, outrageous or sinful to see Americans talking about getting their kids vaccinated when we're, and that's not, yeah. That's not, they don't mean to be that way, but it's just, it's, we have such a right. variation around the world of situations. Right.
Right. Or they don't know what's going on outside. I mean, yes, I see the news. I see people on Twitter. You know, I listen to so many podcasts, and almost every podcast I listen to from the US starts with the hosts asking each other, oh, did you get your vaccinations? And I'm fully vaxxed. And here in Japan, the only people approved at all, the only people eligible at all are 65 and over. And of those, I have yet to hear from anyone who, under the age of 70 who has received a voucher from the government to get vaccinated. And the prime minister had said that he hoped to have everyone over 16 eligible by next spring, 2022. He got a lot of pushback. So now he's trying to speed it up. But the target is still like for people, I'm 48. For me, probably it'll be sometime autumn. Maybe I might be eligible. So it's a very different world. And I do see right now, you know, I'm starting to fill this gap, and I'm in one of, you know, the third largest economy in the world in Japan. And everyone thinks we're so advanced, but I'm increasingly looking across the ocean, and it's like part of the world's starting to move on. And then over here in Asia, in Japan and in India, elsewhere, many countries in Asia, it's still very much raging. So Adil, we talk a lot about, you know, the situation there and the graveness of it. And I'm wondering, what can people do from afar? So Star Trek fans, for example, who love to help those in need, they're looking at what's happening in India and wondering how they can help. What organizations are accepting donations? What are those who you can trust who are directly and transparently providing assistance? What can people do?
Well, there are certain organizations, those who are actually working. Yesterday, I was talking to one of them myself in the villages of the Himalayan region, in a state called Uttarakhand. That means the northern sector, you know, the name of the state called Uttarakhand. And there's this person who is trying to sort of get oximeters or oxygen concentrators, oxygen cylinders from the cities, because they don't have it there, and to transport them from the cities to the smaller town and then carry it up into the mountains to 350 villages he's trying to do. And I know that he's actually working hard to do it. And the money but they're not even preferring money. They said, send us the things, because we don't have the means to go and buy those things even. So unless you cannot send, you know, the in kind, we would be accepting the money, but it doesn't help much. So, and certain organizations, they don't have the clearance from the government to receive foreign donations. So the government of India has tightened or they have changed the laws. So there is a very strict, stringent law in order to receive foreign money from India. So there are certain organizations that I know. There's one called Hemkunt Foundation. So I will definitely share those with you later. Or I'll email it to you, so that if anybody wants to send something, any amount is welcome for these organizations, those who are actually working on the ground to actually help people. So that is one way. And definitely the other way is probably that talking to people, and if the government of other countries here, and they're already sending a lot of medical amenities to India, United States and France and smaller countries like Uzbekistan, they have sent something, you know. So everybody is trying to help India out right now. So I'm extremely, extremely grateful that the countries across the globe are waking up to Indian situation and helping them out. But apart from that, probably prayers, well wishes, and keeping the hope up. And also the fact that whoever is in different parts of the world, in different countries, not to get infected, you know, again. You know, that would be a great help, because it cannot get over unless it gets over everywhere at the same time, or at a certain amount of time. because otherwise it's a connected world, it's a global phenomena. And like the UK variant came to India and then it mutated here and it became more dangerous here. Then from here, it must have gone to other countries. Yesterday, I was listening to BBC and they were saying that 450 cases of the variant in India, which is found in India, are now being found in the UK. And the impact of that particular mutation is probably more dangerous. Then, so that would be a great thing to wear your masks and get vaccinated. If vaccination helps, I'm sure it does. That's what the scientists are telling us, and we have to trust them.
Yeah, well, you're talking about hospitals being overwhelmed. We do have the same problem here in Japan. We have a lot of space in hospitals, but we don't have enough beds that are equipped to deal with coronavirus treatments. And the Indian variant that you're speaking of has now turned up in Osaka, which is the city that's having the worst problem in Japan at the moment. Mm. So it does spread globally. And just because things are fine where you are in a city in the US or in Europe or somewhere, just because things are looking up locally for you does not mean that the situation is over. And so your point is well taken to keep that in mind and try to help the global society overcome this, because otherwise it will eventually loop its way back around to you. And vaccine protection is not permanent either.
Yeah, I'm seeing the, I thought it was here already. I'm just reading, it was reading up here, the India variant has just reached the US, they're saying. But I mean, has India gone into a lock? Is there a travel in and out right now?
Generally, the other countries which impose the ban on a particular country. So India is probably not flying to, they are ready to fly, but UK has banned Indian flights. A lot of other countries have banned Indian flights. So US probably is still, I'm not sure yet, it has to be verified. US probably is allowing for US citizens, those who are outside of the US, to come in with their spouses or parents, even if they are not Indians, US citizens.
Right.
So I'm not sure yet. No, I don't have the information.
All right. I didn't know how extreme the situation was that they were looking at, like, not letting people travel either, you know, just about spreading.
Yeah. For Japan, our borders are essentially closed still. It is possible to enter, but you have to have certain tests within 72 hours. It was announced a few days ago, though, that entry from India and Pakistan is banned now as a result of the recent developments. So that's what's going on. Adil, obviously, you know, oxygen tanks, as you were saying, that kind of thing would be very difficult for someone, an individual, to send over, but like basic PPE, for example, personal protective equipment, like if someone had the, if someone's listening and they had the means to acquire reasonable amounts of that and get them to an organization, is that a possibility?
I think that could be a possibility. So what I will do after we finish this conversation, I will definitely send, I have done my researches already. I will send the links and the addresses and the, you know, specific details that you would need if anybody wants to send PPE or mask or small, you know, that can be couriered to India from different parts of the world. Yes, of course, I will send you the links. Yes.
Okay. Great. And we'll include those links, that information, on our show page, and we'll share that through social media as well. Another topic I wanted to talk to you about, because this is one thing that struck me about the character that you played on Star Trek Discovery and the current situation, is patience. You're in lockdown right now. You're stuck in your home. You're trying to help your fellow citizens there in India, but you can't really get out and do it, much the way that Sahil was stuck on the station when we first saw him at the beginning of the third season of Star Trek Discovery. And it's kind of a tough thing. It's a true test of patience, I think, both your character on the show and your real life right now.
Although I'm going to hope that you're not in lockdown there in your New Delhi home for 40 years, the way Sahil.
Yes, of course. Definitely.
I'm laughing, but I'm not laughing. Yes.
Right. Well, you know, that's how we all feel. Mm-hmm. I mean, Larry, for most of, more than a year, you were saying it's March, whatever, 397.
Yeah, I did that tally
every
the other day.
Because every day feels like
it's
March.
It's March 400 and something now. Yes. Since we've
been. Right, exactly. Yeah. But Adil, one thing that struck me, I told you before that your portrayal in that episode was really a highlight for me. And one thing that struck me was the patience that you showed, and it felt so organic. It felt so natural the way that you demonstrated that. And so I was wondering, like, where that came from, what informed your performance experiences in your life, and just kind of your views on having patience in the face of adversity in life.
Good question, Christopher. I had been one of the luckiest persons on the planet Earth, I guess, and probably one of the very few actors, who had been blessed, truly blessed by some great people in my country. I had great teachers, acting teachers, but two of them are not only acting teachers, they're also spiritually extremely evolved. And as probably a lot of people don't know, probably you know, that India had been a land of great sages, not only in 10,000 years ago, but as recently as now. And I had been sort of dabbling and dwelling upon the idea of death for last 26 years, since 1996, probably, maybe more than 26 years. Is it 26 years? I'm very bad in mathematics.
Me too.
and the question which I had asked around that time, mid-90s, it actually was motivated by the great teacher, the theorist, and the father of modern acting called Konstantin Stanislavski, who was a Russian man and who wanted to find out how to act better and more convincingly. And he proposed that if we ask these questions, the five W's, why, where, when, what, and who, about the scene, about the circumstances, then you would act better if you could answer all these five W's properly. And another W, which is called the want. What do you want in the scene? So I thought, why can't I extend these questions to my life, in my life? Who am I? Where am I? What am I doing here? And where am I going? And where am I right now? So all these questions I asked, but nobody could answer them. I didn't find anyone from the Western world, the philosophers, the great philosophers, that they could answer those questions in details that I was looking for. I wanted some solid ground to stand on and to answer, to receive certain conclusion for myself. So I finally leaned upon the great Indian masters. And some of them who were there like a few decades ago passed away. Their names are Sri Aurobindo, Ramakrishna Mahaprabhu, and, you know, there are hundreds of names. But mostly I depended on them, and their, to the point, scary details of what happens when you die, after you die. So those read like stories, but stories are powerful, like Star Trek is a powerful story. It gives you hope. It inspires people to come together. It inspires people to believe in humanity, believe in the higher values of human beings, compassion, love, respect, empathy, and all those amazingly beautiful values that we are known to be possessing, and to bring them forth, not buried underneath, you know, somewhere in the desktop, in the hard drive, but bring it on the desktop and have those, you know, to click whenever we want them to click upon and access those. So these people that I read, and they came up with all these practices which had been handed down and passed on to their devotees or their disciples. And I had been lucky enough to find someone who saved me twice, literally. And now, since last 20 years, that I had been practicing certain practices, which this is not the forum to talk about the practices in details, because we are talking about something else. But I'm just talking about, I'm answering the question that you asked me, where do I find that patience or hope that you have probably glimpsed a little bit, and probably that I have it. Otherwise, it is difficult to fake it in acting.
Right. Yeah.
I would say so. I mean, I was reviewing before we recorded here, and all you had was the long, it was fascinating. And of course, it's the visual effects and now what we, the programmable matter now. But to be the first, we had a recap of the season before, which you weren't a part of, obviously. Burnham comes into the future where the audience is all expecting that. It's the season premiere, the series premiere. And then the first fresh new footage we see is this guy all alone, silently going through his day, your character. And it goes on for minute after minute. And it's a fascinating entree. We had just seen the familiar characters, but it was just a recap. And so the first fresh footage is you. And I was refreshing all over again about how it's that entire sequence that's so fascinating. The bed scenes, the brushing the teeth, all of that, the different parrot colors for the alarm, the digital alarm clock. And then it goes away. And then we catch up with the characters we know. And we're like, well, that was amazing. That was fascinating. And then the payoff at the end. And what I was going to say about whatever you called up from within, it's fascinating to watch you go about your life silently. But when Michael and Book come in at the end, and it's all about him sincerely just saying what he's been doing. 40 years he's been going through this with no hope of, like, talk about the last outpost. And it's all, and then it reflects off her face and then back to his, back to yours. It's such a powerful moment. They're communicating so much about he had this belief in goodness from his father and his grandfather, but that's all he had for 40 years. We've had episodes on Star Trek where people, there was a Picard episode where he lived an entire other life of a man on a planet that died. The planet was doomed. And we've had Chief O'Brien on DS9 living a prison term out in his mind when it was really only, you know, a few hours. Both of the, and Picard's lifetime only in real time, 15 minutes, but his memory experience it is, and he, that was, they were, both those characters were completely affected by that. But here, Sahil was, it wasn't a compressed time. He's lived 40 years getting up every day and doing that. And the power of that when she walked in and it's like, I'm finally relieving you, sir, and I'm commissioning you. I mean, it's just, so from nothing that you're given and that we're given, that scene, that moment was so powerful. I was just blown away just now, refreshing again, what's playing on your faces. And they do that close up of the hand clasp, the shake that turns into a hand clasp. And it just speaks volumes. And it's just such a testament to you and to her and the scene and the writers and Tundi, Ola Tundi, the director. It was incredible. I want to say congratulations. It's just a monument to the simplicity and yet the depth behind it. So your method here was amazing. And it's amazing how that was so packed with getting so, you know, it's just the scene at the beginning and the scene at the end. And it is so deep and rich with what little we're given, much less what you're given. And it totally played. And then the scene at the end of the season was all the more powerful. Her face lights up like a billboard, you know, and you look at each other.
But your face really lights up.
Yes, yes, yes. But it's, you know, but it's, that's the power in those simple, they're really not long moments, but there is so much power behind it when we do get it. And it's amazing. You know, I don't know if, are we allowed to ask if you're back seen again next season or?
That is my response.
Touche. Yeah.
Well, Larry, there's a spinoff with Sahil and Linus where they just both have their personal transporters and they're just zipping all over.
Okay.
Yeah.
Star Trek, so, beam us around. That's what it's called. Yeah.
Yeah.
Larry, your statement, your comment on the scenes reminded me, and I'm going back to what I was saying, that it's extremely well-written and well-placed scene, well-placed character. And to even imagine that this person would live for 40 years is the imagination of the writer, you know, of the writer's, writer's room. And the story of forgiveness by Jesus Christ, whether he actually lived or not, it never mattered to me. But the someone can think of, while being crucified, is saying, forgive them, Lord, they know not what they're doing, is a very powerful idea, very powerful story. That's the reason I'm saying all the stories that I have heard and read by the great masters about having patience and not only saying or telling you that be patient, But it doesn't mean anything to anybody unless you know you have tools to practice it and experience it, and then believing in it. It's scientific in nature that you do not believe what you see or hear. You practice, and found it to be true. You experiment and found it to be true. It is very subjective, unlike scientific, the other kind of science that I'm talking about, that it has to be objective. But here in spiritual truth is that you practice yourself and you found it to be true. And that had been the practice for last 20 years. And I was asking as an actor myself that what have I been doing for 40 years in that place? In fact, I had the idea that probably the scene could open that I am doing my yoga asana, you know, like I am upside down on my headstand and practicing. It could have been interesting.
They didn't take it.
Instead of lying down on the bed, but I didn't say that. I thought, okay, no, this is too much. I just came in as a character. I should not start advising the director on that.
Yoga mats are not nearly as dramatic when they dissolve away as whole beds are.
That's what... Right.
Exactly. Yeah. I didn't say that. I didn't tell anybody about it, but I thought maybe that could... So I asked myself, what have I been doing for the last 40 years? And I took that idea from my own life because I lived on a river island without electricity and running water for 3.5 years in India. I'd been working on the craft, on the instrument, which is this instrument, the actor's body and the breath and emotions and breath and what is the relationship between physical body, breath and emotion, and vice versa. And to find a place within oneself, which is way beyond the emotions. Emotions are extremely dramatic. They are a very strong reality, but they're a very tiny reality of human beings. And human beings constantly identify with the emotions and make it almost the ultimate reality about themselves. That's the suggestion and the prescription and had been discussed in details in the literatures, in the books that I read. It's almost they equate it like the waves of the sea. When you are standing on the seashore, is very dramatic, but if you just go higher up, the entire sea is what you are, not the waves, which is lashing on the shore. That is the amount of the emotional reality in one's life, according to the great masters of India. But we are not trained to go beyond the emotions. And there is this huge space within where you can anchor yourself and you can be not only patient. Patient is one of the consequences. You can be quiet. You can be absolutely unshakable. And you can establish and fortify yourself in that space. But I'm saying all this, I'm not saying I can be all the time that, but I have had the glimpses, even having the glimpses of it, even just tasting it for a second itself is a huge thing. And it is so far taking me through this, you know, through this time all around is almost, we can compare it to the situation of Hollywood films' doom reality, as they have very, very well visualized in so many films, you know, the catastrophic films. So coming back to Sahil, probably Sahil and Adil both have certain practices that they have done and they are reaping the benefits right now.
It's interesting the things you describe, because you do capture those in the scene, moments sitting at the desk, interactions with Burnham. One moment that gets me, it's a very quiet moment, but she asks you, will you accept the commission? And you don't really say anything, but there's just this expression that it's so powerful. So the things you've studied, the things you've trained, it maybe you said you can't be that all the time, but you certainly can in those moments.
Well, and fictionally, he says his father and his grandfather were both commissioned Starfleet officers. Mm-hmm. And you have no doubt that he would have been too, but there was no one to do it. And he was such a, I don't want to say a stickler, but I mean, he was doing, which is what Burnham obviously do. He was running the scanner. He was living this totally solitary life with whatever fictional things he could cook up, but he was doing the job with all but a name only. Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't have the pips on his jacket, but
right.
He's doing the same thing that they had trained him up to do in their little, you know, and suddenly isolated situation after the burn.
Yeah.
But it all just reads and it's so powerful. He was there in name only. And it took her to come in and say, you're doing the job now. Here, I dub thee. I grant thee. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
You've been doing it. You're doing it better than half the people I know back home. I mean, she didn't say that. But, you know, you almost think she could have.
Right.
Because it takes so much more to keep doing the job all alone when no one's looking. To do anything the right way when no one's looking is so much more demanding than when you're surrounded by everybody else who's doing what they're supposed to do, which is a pretty powerful thought.
Well, Adil, you can see how real Star Trek is to us and the characters are to us. It's the same for so many people. And I was also curious, in a situation like we're in the world right now that we've been in for the past year, extremely difficult times, many of us turn to entertainment as a remedy in difficult times. And you're someone who has given your life to theater and film and the arts and all the other things that you've just told us about today. So how do you see storytelling? Like, why is storytelling like this? Which some people might look at Star Trek and say, oh, it's just a fictional thing with aliens and spaceships. That's how my mother always saw it when she knew I loved it when I was a kid. But why is that so important to help us get through times like this?
I think art, which is filled with a higher vision, aspirational, and not looking at the doom only, like most of the OTT platforms, as you probably have noticed, that filled with dark subjects. It is one of the saints say that, you know, you're extremely skillful, like eagle or a vulture, but you're looking down on the planet, on the carcass, you know, on the lower depths of humanity. So what is that skill? Does that skill mean anything? Unless we are... through art, we can inspire human beings to do better than what they are doing right now. Not physically, but in their personal evolutionary stages, they can go toward the higher spaces of lighter spaces within, which would call for higher values, as Star Trek had been always propagating. And that's the reason why probably Star Trek is one of the most beautiful and most inspirational storytelling which has happened in the history of storytelling, in the history of humanity. So stories are very important, and how you tell stories, not only through performance art, but there are so many different kinds of art. In India, we call them, we have 64 different kinds of art, including handicraft and, you know, pottery or gardening or all kinds of art. And art always, because it helps the human being, the individual, to find something which is finer, and allows to go out of the gross and the gross state of being towards the finer spaces, which is prevalent in each human being. And if we can read a beautiful story which will call forth, or which will invoke something which is of higher values, which will trigger reconciliation, which will trigger empathy, which will trigger respect, and which will trigger inclusiveness, which Star Trek, I think, is one of the greatest theme of Star Trek. And especially in the third season, it had been even widened to include the third gender. And it's so beautiful. So I think very carefully curating good stories, and to find them, to locate them in books, and because theater is now in an impossible situation, we cannot go out. So the only possible way is to find those things is to, I'm sorry, I'm rambling because there are so many things to say. Like, I have a hard drive which is curated by one of my dearest and most respected practitioner of a particular path in India, 250 films that he curated, and he watched it 6 to 7 times. And in spite of that, still, if he likes it, then only he had put it in the hard drive. And those films are from 1936 to modern day, you know, Japanese and South Korean and Indian and French and Spanish and, you know, American. I'm watching those films and I didn't understand why he took all the trouble. It took almost 7 years to curate those films. And he handed over to me and I'm watching them every day, almost every afternoon. And I'm so inspired. After each film, I feel this quietude within myself. And because each film explored the potential of a human being, where a human being could go, inwardly can go. And how, there's a beautiful French film called The Grand Illusion. It happens during the war, the First World War. I don't know whether you have seen or not, you know, and it's a black and white film. The print is bad, but I was glued as if it was shot now. You know, it was so vivid that the story of these two people, those who had been captured, the German captured the French pilot, and the way they treat each other is beautiful. It shows that laws of the war must be maintained. You cannot lose humanity in the process of the war. War happens. It had been, decisions have been taken by the political system. But as individuals, when we confront the opposite camp, do we have to lose our humanity? It's beautiful. So there are so many of them. So what I'm saying is that, yes, art, performance art, cinema could become a great platform, like stories, as you said. The stories are so important. Stories are the ways that great minds have written them, and they have their visionaries. They see the world, what the world could be, rather than what the world is. There are so many beautiful things happen in the world. Of course, we don't see it in the news because news is bad news most of the time. So what we need to probably inspire the great writers and directors and cinematographers and the entire film cinema fraternity is to tell stories which are probably would bring the world together rather than talking about the lower depths of humanity. This is high time. And now we are seeing that this time, this is in this catastrophe. You know, if this does not teach us the lesson that what we could possibly do or where the world could be rather than where it is now, we know where it is now. Quite often we know, you know, especially the bad things.
There are so
fast.
Yeah, there are so many levels that have been exposed. We say have the phrase in America, rip the Band-Aid off. We've seen so much exposed that should be better. But one thing we all know is, and maybe it wasn't always the highest of art and cinema, but people all know what they've done in the lockdown to get through the days, and people that didn't have their jobs going or whatever, or they're home with their kids from school here in the States and around the world, but certainly have leaned on entertainment for their sanity. And Star Trek fans and Star Trek fandom have been going back through all their, you know, favorite shows and series or watching series they hadn't seen. And so, but I have to ask you, I hope I don't duplicate. You were talking very glowingly there about Star Trek and what's special about Star Trek, but were you a fan or did you catch up when you were cast, or what's your own little personal connection to Star Trek?
Much later, because I grew up in a small little town where newspapers used to come 3 days after they were published. So, you know, and I spent 17 years in that hometown. And after that, when I came to the capital city of the state, which is in the northeast called Assam, there were no televisions that I had access to. So there was no way that I could have seen Star Trek at all. Much later, when I had enough, you know, resources to have a television, and then certain episodes which were available, because I was depending completely on what was telecast in India. So I didn't have access. So then the video cassettes came much later. And then, there's this Star Trek. And yeah, so much later probably in my late 20s, early 30s, and then, of course, I got so busy with my work in terms of understanding acting. And then slowly, when internet came in, then you had access to, you know, to find. And I was like, what? Oh, my God, you know, these people have done something incredible, which probably I would imagine the world could be like that.
Yeah. So you came to it.
Human species, but, you know, all kinds of species, all kinds of entities from across the universe.
So you came to it on your own, or did someone introduce you? Or
no one introduced me.
Because what the story you told there is not, I mean, we have plenty of American and Canadian and British and all around people who were they generally knew of Star Trek in the culture, or maybe they didn't. But as the years have gone by and the decades, it's been more in the 70s and the 80s. It was easy to be an alien. But the last 10, 15 years, it's hard to at least not have heard of Spock or whatever, you know, the Enterprise, whatever, in the cult, just in culture. And a lot of working actors come to a Star Trek role having no idea, but they at least have a, I mean, it sounds like you were further along than that. I was just curious because you stepped right in, and it made me realize when I put your career together, I was reviewing it, that you were the father in Life of Pi, which is, I think, how a lot of mm-hmm. people know your prior career before we got to that base on Discovery. And I just wanted to ask you here on the tech side of things, all of those scenes where you're in the bed and with the bird and all of that and the brushing teeth, all very heavy CGI. Was that like, had you done a lot of work with that? I mean, I'm trying to think in Pi, obviously so much of the ocean part, but you weren't part of the ocean scenes. You had the zoo up front. I don't know. I just was wondering what the experience was like on Discovery compared to that, or just what your shoot was like to deal with all that. And all alone, no interaction, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm from theater, and theater, when I say I'm from theater, I am a theater actor, and I've done it all my life since I was 7 years old. And on the stage, there is nothing that you could possibly do. Nowadays, they put a lot of things on the stage if you have resources like all those Broadway shows and all. But the kind of theater that I do, I believe in only the actor and the actor's body and the voice, and if possible, words, which is produced by your voice. And you have to have the training in order to vividly imagine what you are seeing around you in order for the audience to see that. I mean, unless I see it, you cannot see it. Unless I see the tiger, and if the camera is on me close up, and I'm looking at the tiger, if I don't see it, you cannot see it, because the imagination that I have will trigger the imagination amongst the spectators. So that's the principle of imagination or invoking something. Unless I feel it, it is very difficult for the other person to feel it. And we are great transmitter and receivers. The human instrument is like that. So it was not difficult for me, unfortunately. Of course, it's always difficult to do a great job of anything, but I'm not saying it was easy, but it was easier for me to imagine the tiger, to imagine that yes, of course, there were the chairs. They took out the legs of the chair in the CGI. And, you know, there was no alarm clock with the bird, so I had to just do this in the...
Oh, so that wasn't real.
Right,
okay.
Right.
And I would ask the VFX supervisor, is it here? Yes, yeah, just do it here. I was like, okay. So that's, you have to remember it and you have to do it quite a few times. I generally believe in rehearsals so that, you know, I don't waste anybody else's time. So I do it myself. And so it is all done in a very professional way by a team and little support from the actors, which makes it believable for the audience.
And I was looking at you've done films, well, theater, obviously, where you started in India, and you were in England and studying in the UK, obviously. But as far as film goes, you've done films all around the world, different nationalities behind the production. A whole list of that. And so forgive me if I'm being, this wasn't your first, I'm going to say, American-Canadian screen experience, was it? Or was it? I'm just curious what you found. I think of Star Trek as American, but they're filming it in Canada, so I have to call it Canadian. But I didn't know what the experience was like compared to other filmic experiences. You know, granted it was science fiction and you had all this heavy CG until you actually had some actors on the scene with you to interact with.
Right.
How it compared to your other film, especially recent ones where the tech has been there.
Strangely, in my beginning of my adventure into cinema, I started doing films in 2010, very recently. And in 2011, I was shooting Life of Pi, which is $110 million film, the budget. And they spent probably 20% of it while shooting. They shot it for 6 months, and rest of the money was spent for VFX and, you know, computer graphics and all that CG.
That tiger in the boat on the ocean. Yes.
And when I first read the script, I was like, how will he pull it off? But I thought, okay, he's angry. He will pull it off. So I had immense trust in him. So this Star Trek, I don't know the budget of each episode. I have no idea. Why I'm talking about this is that most of the time in India, before doing Life of Pi or Star Trek, I did small films, which is very little money. And one has to do multiple roles in the film. Like, I'm also bringing the tea, you know, giving it to the other co-actors. And then the director say, Adile, now please don't do that. Come and, you know, do your scene. And so I acted recently, in fact, in 2019, I acted in a film and the budget is probably $1,500, the entire budget of the film. And wow. It turned out to be a good film. It went and opened at the Black Knights Festival in Estonia, in Tallinn. So I'm used to, you know, different kinds of films and genres. And I love it because the roles which I get to play in those are very, very weird, strange, and I've never done it. And I'm not like that in life. And I get to do it. And on the other hand, suddenly, you know, you get to act in Star Trek. Probably the budget of each episode is big enough to cover 5 or 6 or 9 films in India, in certain films, the kind of films that I do. You know, so it's a great experience to be in the midst of the high-end professionals, the HODs and all the crew members are extremely, extremely professional. They're very good. They're, you know, their quality and their precision, the meticulousness in terms of executing the artistic vision of the director and the producers. And it's a treat. It's a feast for an actor to be in the presence of these people who would not settle for less, and which I think is a great opportunity and an honor. And I'm probably one of the luckiest actors in India, probably in the world, because there are very few who ended up in Star Trek. And I'm very happy that I'm associated with the thematic vision of the storytelling process. Yes.
Yeah. There are a lot of worse. Just to set the record straight, the budget of an episode of Discovery is about 8 million, a little over 8 million, 8.5.
8 million. Yeah, there you go. So 8. Okay. Nothing to say. It's an overwhelming budget. But they do a great job with it. That's the thing that quite often I've seen in India, that the budget is there, but they quite often, I'm not saying all films, but quite a lot of films, that there is a wastage of money because of lack of planning and lack of foreseeing the problems which might arise in the future. And I've seen also Ang Lee sending someone from Taiwan to Paris to get a T-shirt, you know, because you only get this T-shirt in France or some clothes in France, you know. And so, because that is the artistic vision and the precision to execute it and the motivation to execute it. I don't consider that a waste. That's the kind of rigor of executing the artistic vision, you know.
The world's biggest prop buy. Send the prop people out. The biggest prop errand ever.
Paris, yes. Yeah. Exactly.
I had one question I would ask you, Adil, and I don't know if this information's out there anywhere or not, but from the first episode to the last episode, did they call you back for the final episode for that one scene where you're commissioned, or was that shot earlier when other things were shot? I'm just curious how it connects, because largely because the huge smile on your face when you're in your uniform compared with your demeanor in the beginning is striking.
Oh, I think I didn't have any idea about the last episode at all. Probably in the middle of their shoot, probably they decided to bring me in the last episode. That's probably an afterthought. I can't tell. But I was not intimidated. I was not told that I will be in the last episode. I was initially only be doing these two episodes first and the second, no, the very, very, like in a passing glance that you see me. But the last episode, I was asked to come quite a, I would say, at the last moment.
You didn't, did you have script pages? Because we can always do forensics on the dates. We can see how late in the script process the dates on top of your script were. That's interesting. Yeah. It felt like they were really packed because they brought back several people just for a pass. They were doing kind of a wrap up of the season, and a lot of the people they'd met along the way had a little last, if they had no lines even, you had a scene, but several of the people were just included. It was enough to see them and she's narrating over it or someone's, yeah, I think it's Michael, voiceovering over it. But that's awesome. That's awesome. But it was very impactful. I'm just saying. And then the cherry on top there, the little scene at the end was very powerful too. It was a wonderful bringing it home, tying the circle.
Well, I think the scene's very important for the optimism element because we see you in the beginning. You've been waiting for 40 years. You're very happy that Michael Burnham has arrived, and you get a commission in the field to be the comms officer there. But in the end, all of your patience pays off. We get the huge smile, but it also shows the optimism of we start the season with a great tragedy that's happened, but we end the season with the view that things can get better and things can be rebuilt.
It's almost as if that hope is you.
Well, hope is a powerful thing.
Yes.
Sahil says in the episode. I wish that they had done more with your character during the season and we had seen you more. I don't know if you read Star Trek novels, Adil, but our dear friend Una McCormick, who is an author in the UK, her new Discovery novel, Wonderlands, just dropped yesterday. And I've been reading it actually for a couple of weeks now because I have a review copy. You're in the book a lot. You have a big role in the book. So she's expanding upon your character.
Okay,
Dale, there's some research. You have to get caught up now. It's pandemic, but still, you got to get caught up with, you're going to get questions.
To give you the background, what the novel is, it's that year between the first episode and the second episode of the season. It's that year that Michael is lost there. And so she meets you, and it's what happens after that as she spends time with you there on the station.
But the novel is it virtually released or?
It's available in hardcover, of course, but also in ebook and even audiobook, which I jokingly said on Twitter is narrated by Grudge Cat, Books Cat on the show, which would make an interesting audiobook. Yeah, I'll send you the link to it. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
But there you go. There's some homework, some new homework for us. Did you now here as an actor when you got picked when you found like you said 11th hour very late in the game that here's the scene here's what's happened did you go to any do any even at least the barest of an actor's you know create your own subtext or did Tundi did you all talk about you know on set what might be behind I mean it's obvious right on the surface but acting is getting below the surface and bringing some texture. Did you come up with a backstory of what had happened between their first meeting and that meeting there?
No, really. I think that's the good thing about good directors, that they cast the right actors who would... There was very little discussion on... I auditioned for the same, you know, with the same scene, differently written. So I went to the set and we did the scene and that was it. There was no discussion. Mm-hmm. Not in terms of how emotions will work and what's your backstory, but my backstory as an actor. So this person had been there, you know, like, as you know, for 40 years, what has he been doing? Of course, he has probably practiced what I already spoke of, you know, to stay sane, to not lose his mind for 40 years in that place.
Take a year-long pandemic times 40, everybody.
Right. And how would that person who is in confinement for 40 years almost and doing it sincerely, probably doing his job was one of the most important element how he saved himself, just doing it, focusing on the work, you know, outside of him, you know, objectively looking at the thing. So that is a great help. So all kinds of backstories came. So I didn't set on one. And then I forgot about it completely. Mm-hmm. I do not plan. This is how I will do. I will definitely follow the instructions which are in the script, written in words, that mm-hmm. his voice chokes. One great clue that, this is where the director, the writer, is envisioning the character to go towards. So I just followed that, and I didn't really have to act, because Michael Burnham, Sonequa Martin Green, is such a generous, vulnerable, powerful actor and a person in life that I had to just look at her and things happened, you know. Mm-hmm. That's one of the most important elements my teachers have taught me, that don't focus on yourself, how you will do it. Focus on the other actor. Just look at the other person. Truly receive the person with your breath, and then the response will happen. Don't make it happen, but let it happen. There's mm-hmm. a huge difference between the two. So, yeah, also some ideas came, as Larry had been asking. Yes, what have I been doing and all that. But I definitely, or probably, and the other instruction I always follow, one of my teachers gave me, all the brilliant ideas, you must flush it down the toilet. And you should never entertain them. You go there with a clean slate and you don't know what to do. And there where magic happens.
Absolutely. I was really asking, that's all great. That's incredible. I was kind of getting at that last scene. If you had fit just for that year from the time you had met her until the, if that was part of, you know, if he's obviously been promoted. I mean, we know the things. He's been promoted. He's part of the world. He's not isolated anymore, you know, but that's a path. And it's only been a few. It hasn't been a year, I guess. It's been, you know, a short period of time. But it must have been a huge change for him after sitting there for 40 years. And then in just a few weeks, a few months.
Probably you have noticed, Larry, because you probably have seen the scenes more than I have seen. on the screen, that there is a difference. I was watching it the other day, and I saw this difference in the state of being mm-hmm. of this person. The lightness which has come, the walk, you know, and in the being. And when I'm there, I'm sitting on the chair waiting for Michael Burnham to show up. I didn't know that she will show up. There was a sort of a stolen, you know, how do you call that word? Yeah, the seriousness, you know, it's almost mm-hmm. like there's the gravitas is towards, he's holding on to a thread, and though with hope, he's managing to retain the hope, but still there was this sense of, I don't know, he had a very serious face, Aditya Sai. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the solemnity there. He's hanging on.
Solemnity, almost, yes.
Yeah, yes.
On the
slow motion, bare-knuckled.
Correct. But still, he is very capable to hold mm-hmm. on. And probably he could go another 20 years like that. but it has taken its toll in him. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he's not a saint. You know, he's not like a realized being. It's just a human being. But he's managing to, he's managing to be there. It is a tightrope walk. But when you see him, towards the end, he's a lighter person. He's like, hey. I mean, so much of joy, of course. It's not like, you know, hey, let's go for a drink. It wasn't that kind of a lightness. But there was this lightness of joy and seeing him. So I think what probably has happened without my volition, without thinking about backstory, that, okay, the difficult phase have passed and things are changing. The hope that I had sitting there has been sort of realized, and let me get back into the situation. And
these gears have not been engaged for, they really have not been engaged for 40 years, and now suddenly we're a hot rod. I mean, or whatever bad metaphor you want to use there. Yeah. And it has the lightness and bearing of an actor who didn't expect to be called back for one more scene late in the year.
And there's a layer right there. Oh, here I am too. Yes.
And Larry, another answer to that is that the novel that Una and Adil mm-hmm. will write together coming up, that'll be Sahil's story of what happened during that year.
Yeah. Yes. When you said that, that's what kind of sparked me. I was just curious if you were carrying anything in your, but yeah, it was there on the page enough to run with. I was just curious what you had done.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Adil, if we start to close out, just thinking, I love that, you know, we started talking about the serious situation that we're in the world now, and then we've brought that through to the optimism that Star Trek has brought to all of us. So looking at the road ahead of us in the real world right now, how can we all come out of this year, this tragic year? And for those of us here in Asia, like you and me, it's going to go on for a while longer. But just thinking about how people can take care of each other, how we can learn from experiences of tragedies like the pandemic in the real world, like the burn on the show, and move ourselves closer to that world that we're all trying to build together.
Well, I've been talking
pressure.
To my... No, I know. I wish I had. But I've been talking to my wife, Kristen, since last... I know, always been talking, but specifically on this issue, that probably the greatest gift and good that we can do to ourselves is to find something doable, actionable, either to do something about it or even to do with yourself. A practice, even 10 minutes of deep breathing consciously, just to keep oneself in a spirit which probably could dream for hope, as you say, because nothing else that we could possibly do. Nothing else in a sense. Yes, some of us, we can go out and, you know, help or become an activist. But it is important that to help somebody else, like in the aeroplane, you put your oxygen first and then you can help somebody. Truly help. Constructively help. Not give advices which turned out to be, in the long run, turned out to be counterproductive. So to even come to give a good advice or say a few words of utmost kindness and with utmost empathy, probably we could all do that, because it doesn't have to go out of the house. One doesn't have to go and find somewhere else, something which is miraculous. But what can just be ground, you know, to fortify the quietude that we all have a little bit, to increase it, to make it not shakeable so easily by what is going on around us. And to, when, if someone calls you in distress, you are patient enough to hear the person well and to say a few words which are of deep meaning, and you mean it and it makes sense to the other person, that someone is there, you know, even to just talk on the phone. I think that would be a great help. And I think that the world, which I probably see that it has to change, the entire system has to radically change, the way we educate people, the way the politics is working, the way the WHO is functioning, the way the world WTO is functioning, the way the vaccine patent is happening, you know. So all these have to radically probably crumble. And then there could be a possibility that human beings would live in a better future, not 950 years from now, but probably sooner. And for that, to take one step, whether to call a friend or not to call a friend, I haven't yet called my student who just lost her mother, because I feel that I have to first ground myself in order to say even one word, not to repeat the ritual, "Oh, I'm so sorry to hear your loss." It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
What would I say? And those words I would say must have the power behind which could probably heal the other person. You know, how do we get there? Just, it is available everywhere. Just practice which comes to you naturally, organically. Practice something which probably will help you to just have an inner smile and an inner quietude. Yeah. And from there, you operate and make the other person a bit more comfortable in these difficult times.
That's wonderful advice.
I think if nothing else, the last year has shown the power of connection. People we know, people we don't know. And things like, you know, Zoom and virtual connections have been a godsend that way. It's made it easier to do that. But even then, people have appreciated you know, we can't touch, but we can touch psychically or psychologically, emotionally, at least. And yeah, I hope we've come through this and people have realized an awful lot of what we took for granted or what we didn't realize was an issue or problem or saw things through other people's eyes. I hope that's at least the silver lining.
The other aspect, sorry, Christopher, I probably should add that there is one thing to be cautious, extremely cautious, and there is another thing to be scared and cautious. So if we can find a way not to be scared, but yet be extremely cautious, because fear, according to my experiential understanding, instantly attacks the immune system. In Ayurveda, the Indian medicine system, it says emotions and immune systems are a system, you know, both of them are intertwined like that. If you're scared, you pull the immune system down. When the immune system is down, you get scared. It's like, it's a downhill spiral. So to be able to be extremely cautious and yet not to be scared is, and how not to be scared, you know, there are, as I said, there are so many ways one can find. And just breathing, you know, deep breathing, gently sitting for 10 minutes, 5 minutes, 20 minutes, 1 hour, you know, if you can do it for 1 hour, 1.5 hours a day, it just changes the way you feel about what is going around you. So I cannot recommend that enough.
Yeah, that's excellent advice. I do try to do that myself, although I'm not very good at doing it every day. But it is something that, you're right, it does change your mindset, change your feelings quite a lot. Yeah, very good advice. So we talked earlier about some organizations or some ways people can help, and you're going to share those with us. And we'll put those on the show page for this episode, which will be on our website and in the show notes as well. And also we'll share on social media. But Adil, if people want to, you know, keep up with things that you're doing or follow your updates from what's happening in India or anything with your work, where should they go to find you?
Most of the work is, I don't have a personal website, and I only have these three social media handles, which is Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And IMDb, I guess, is one of the places where most of the films which I have done or under production or post-production are listed. And whenever the films or the television series, whatever I do, or OTT platform series I do, I try to put it up on my Twitter. So probably Twitter and Instagram are the best places to find out at _ Adil Hussain, ADILHWSAIN. And I don't have a peer missionary who works for me at all. I don't believe in that. For some reason, I never had to look for work. It always came. Mm-hmm. And, and I, why would I unnecessarily, you know, push myself into the place where I'm not probably required and I'm not supposed to be in? I believe in that strongly. And so, yes, one of the best ways probably Twitter and Instagram and IMDb.
And Larry, we'll give it one more shot. And also season 4 of Star Trek Discovery, right?
He's trying to reel you in there. Yeah. No, I was going to say, I remember when your episode, when the episode first premiered, you were on Twitter and you were, we have an expression, you were popping your buttons. You were very, very proud of the work and people were excited that you were interacting with people. Yeah. Out on public Twitter a lot. And I know you did some interviews back then and got involved. So I knew you were very proud of the work. And it's something to be, you are now forever and ever linked. You're a part of the Star Trek family, as we say. It's something that's been around for 55 years and you have brethren of all nations and eras. And, you know, it's part of a big family that you will.
I cannot undo that anymore. I'm stuck. I'm happy to be.
Yeah,
completely stuck there. Yeah, absolutely.
I could tell. Anyway, it was really heartwarming to watch. You know, like, okay, I can talk. When anyone's episode, whether they're acting or even writing or, you know, on designing or something, and they or the artists can show by, here's a closer look at what I, you know, did for the show. when that now that we have the social media age and that's a thing that didn't used to be a thing, people would maybe a year or two or 20 years later hear about it. But now it's like the minute it airs, here's my socials and here's me talking. And I'm so proud to be in this. And people are happy to talk back at you. And it was always fun to see that happen. So good on you. But thank you for taking the time to talk now.
Please. I generally do respond to sincere questions, not all the generic question, but, you know, when someone is trying. Because I think that it's the greatest gift for a doer, a performer to receive is a sincere word of not appreciation, but recognition of something truthful which has happened. Mm-hmm. And if I did it with utmost sincerity, and if that has been received the way I envisioned the audience would receive, and when I hear and feel that, I like to instantly respond to that. And say, okay, I'm in the correct direction. I'm in the correct, you know, I'm treading the right path. Yeah. Of embodying somebody else, yeah. You know, a character written by somebody else completely who I have no clue who those people are.
Well, speaking of connection, that's the most organic and honest you can have there. Yeah.
Well, thank you. We really appreciate your time today. I mentioned up front, we've been talking about doing this for a while. And when things became really bad in India, I decided to kind of wait a while because, you know, the situation obviously is far more important, what's going on there. But hopefully we, you know, in talking about it here, we've had an opportunity to at least share the news, share what's happening there and see if anyone can help in some ways. But of course, we all hope that things improve and please take care and hope that there won't be too much more tragedy ahead of us and we can emerge from all of this soon.
I hope so too. And hope is a powerful thing, as you know.
Yes. Good words.
Very much.
Good words. Well, and thank you for sharing what to let us know what we can do to help here. Wherever I say here, Chris is in Japan too, but wherever we are, whatever we can do to help the situation there.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Larry, Christopher. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, Larry, it was wonderful to have Adil on. As I mentioned in the discussion, we've been talking about doing it for quite a while, and then the situation became quite bad there in India. So I did not want to disturb what was going on there, but now we had a chance to talk, and it was not only good to hear what's happening on the ground there in India and ways people can perhaps help, it was also great to hear about his experience shooting Discovery.
Shooting Discovery and the awareness. Again, he's a man of the globe and doing movies and drama around the globe. And Star Trek, it's his voice is lighting up. His face is lighting up the same way that Sahil's lit up. I mean, there's a real corollary there. And that's what I go back to. I saw him, if this is possible, light up on Twitter and Instagram. And you could just tell he was glowing from, and it wasn't just a, oh, hi, I'm an actor and the world found me. I mean, I can tell coming from his background that he realized that this was a big thing and he's not a multi-billion dollar, you know, movie franchise, but Star Trek is an amazing community and it is global. And it is, I often say, of all the entertainment properties people can be associated with as actors or writers or creatives of any stripe, they love, once they're in Star Trek, they get it and they love being part of something that's as positive as Star Trek is. And you could tell that was a deal all the way. And that's why it was great to kind of circle back with him and see that. And then against the light of what's happening now to play that. Yeah.
I think it'll come through in audio with the voice. We don't put these shows out as video, but if people could have seen what you're talking about, you know, lighting up so often when he was talking about his experiences training and acting or spiritual gurus, the things that he's learned. He lights up so much. It's just
the deleted yoga scene from the opening of the season. Yeah.
That would have been interesting to see for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Larry, you are staying busy as well, and you're very lucky, unlike Adil and me. You're living in a country that's actually taking some steps back into potentially normal life again, so you're able to do a little bit more. So, you know, tell people what's going on and also where they can go to keep up with that.
Well, you know, the pandemic yielded the show that I do, the live stream, and then we made it a podcast now, also audio, that I do with Dr. Mm-hmm. Ali Mattu, who was a great geek guy and fanboy that happens to be a clinical psychologist.
Before he came a real doctor?
Before he was as a college student, you know, high school college student. He has an origin story, too. But, you know, I met him at Comic-Con a few years back, about 8 years ago, I guess, in the early teens. And I did a panel with a psychology of Trek and Star Wars panel with him and Dre Adamende. And anyway, we have this wonderful show that I really love now called Life Support Live that we do on Saturdays live. And then we, you know, live stream it. And then we archive the video. And then also we now have an audio podcast and we have a great community growing. And we say it's going boldly through uncertain times. Dr. Trek and Dr. Ali, one of us is a real doctor. And it's a great, we geek out with Star Trek and we have a theme every week and it's a Star Trek theme viewed against some mental health issue or some social, cultural, sociological thing. And the whole idea is to have fun with Trek, but maybe come away with some insights. And it's not hardcore. We don't, you know, there's not a quiz the next day or anything, but it's been really rewarding. And it was a child of a canceled panel at WonderCon last year that we decided to mm-hmm. do every week, at least see how it goes. And we're still seeing how it goes and we're enjoying it. But that's been a big, speaking of the pandemic and everything that's happened this year, but I still have Tuesdays live for folks at 1 Pacific and 4 Eastern and around the world. You can get in. We have a lot of global folks. And of course, my Portal 47 company service business monthly package deep dive with folks is still happening, where we were doing virtual 6 years before the pandemic hit because it was a great global tool.
Right.
And, you know, everything's at LarryNemechek.com. Some things we're offering for anybody. There's been so much discussion about the pandemic and coming out here in this. I know this is why on one hand, I feel guilty talking to you and Adil about, you know, and the global situation, but I have Europeans mm-hmm. and we talk about this all the time and on Portal and in my other shows. Here in the States, we think we're coming out, but a lot of people are still very cautious and hesitant. And there's just such a mix of emotions and people meeting each other on the other side of the circle, if that makes any sense, you know, about mm-hmm. masking and not masking and all that. It's still right. a big mix. But as of right now, I am planning to be at whatever shape the Vegas convention happens in August. But that's, you know, a lot of people aren't and a lot of people are on the fence, but that's happening. And we're going to offer the 1 day tour out to the Valley of Fire that we've done before out where Kirk died in Generations. Mm-hmm. But I mean, everything is so iffy, but we're just putting things out there in case people's comfort zone is there, what they're doing, you know, in the big picture. So it's as amazing a time now as it was a year ago. Only it's going the other here in the States. And I know that's not where everybody is around the world. So the world is just an interesting place still.
It is, yeah. Well, that tour out there is open air, so that should be mm-hmm. pretty safe. You gave me an idea there, Larry, a new podcast network, the Canceled Ideas Network, where all the podcasts are like spun off of canceled convention panels.
That would fill a book. Yeah, that would fill it. we had to do it virtual, but we were going to do, we were going to have the marching band come in the middle of the... Yeah, yeah. No, anyway, you know, Twitter, Larry Nemechek and LarryNemechek.com for the site. I have some more news coming very soon. Maybe next time we talk, I can announce it, but I can't quite yet for this fall. Something for October.
Okay.
And that's all I better say about it right now.
It's Kelpian Oktoberfest, isn't it?
where did that come from? But I'll take it. We'll take it and run with it. Okay. I'm just trying to think of what, you know, Kelpian Lederhosen looks like and whatever. But okay.
All right. Well, if you want to catch up with what I'm doing, maybe you need to read my magazine, which is about business, because that's what I'm doing most of the time these days. But I am trying to do some podcasting here and there when I can like this. And I am, although it's not visible publicly right now, I have been busy at work behind the scenes on some transformations for the network. Including things on the website and some other things that we're going to be offering, which I am hoping to get out to people soon.
Really, I'm doing my best. How long have you been doing this network thing, Chris?
Almost as long as you've been doing the Con of Wrath, Larry.
Aha, well, yours has had some completion. By the way, we are working on the Con of Wrath. We have a goal to get a rough cut done by the fall, and my editor and I are back working on it.
All right.
When we can keep everything else popping up away. So there.
Yeah. Yeah, it does make it possible for you to do a little bit more. But no, we've had, yeah, the network's been going for more than 10 years now, and we're going through a transition right now, but we will be coming out of that. And we have big plans for the future. So, you know, stay tuned to that. If you want to chat with me, the best place to find me is on Twitter. My username is C Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. That's where I'm most active, although that is my username throughout social media. And yeah, that's about it. I do a number of podcasts. This one, Matthew Rushing and I do The Orb, which is all about Deep Space Nine. I have one called Interphase, which I've done a few episodes of and want to get going again. And also Matthew and I do Literary Treks together, where we talk about the Star Trek novels. And I did mention the Wonderlands novel that Una has written. And Una and I are going to be discussing that pretty soon on Literary Treks. So watch out for that if you're interested. And yeah, that's where you can find me.
Una was the last, I just thought of this, Una was the last live face-to-face interview I did with anybody at Gallifrey here in LA. Yeah. Because the last novel had just come, Discovery novel had just come out, and or was about to, and she wouldn't talk about it. And I was like, this will be months from now. But anyway, she was being very conscientious.
I see.
Yeah. That's amazing.
She's always really fun to talk to.
She's a hoot. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you want to share your thoughts on today's episode, you can send us an email if you want, you know, traditional way through the form on our website, trek.fm/contact. Or go to Twitter. Our user account is TrekFM. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/TrekFM, or join our listeners group on Facebook called the Babel Conference. That's a great place to talk with hosts and fellow listeners. And just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. It should come up. If not, type the Babel Conference. It is a closed group, so if you're not yet a member, you need to answer two questions and agree to the rules of the forum. And then I can let you in. But that's a great way to share your thoughts. And as I mentioned earlier, we will put those links that Adil is going to share so that you can find out how you can help the people in India who need help right now with the pandemic. And we'll share those in social media as well. And yeah, that's about it, Larry. I want to thank everyone who supports the network on Patreon, to all of our associate producers. You can find out more about that at patreon.com/trekfm if you want to find out how you can help us keep all of this going. We really could not do it without everybody, so I really do thank you. But first and foremost, right now, we need to get through this pandemic. And so please check out the links and see how you can help Adil and people in India. And also just stay safe yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely, everybody. Yeah.
Well, Larry, next Ready Room, we'll get back to talking about some other things. We've actually, you and I have still never done our Lower Decks recap, and I did get notification today that my Blu-rays are coming. And
I was going to say, I also saw the Blu-ray set is out.
Well, I pre-ordered it, but you know, it's got to come from the U.S. to Japan.
Yep.
So maybe we'll do that sometime soon.
Awesome. Well, Chris, I think it's time to stick a load of 47 million oxygen bottles for India in it. Because the Ready Room is done.